You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. Okay, may I suggest Hollywood a new rule? If your film is not actually about King Arthur, leave the fucking King Arthur mythos out of it, okay? Nobody likes that point in the third act of a movie where suddenly they're like, oh, look, it's Excalibur, and that's important to the plot. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, but Guy Ritchie's King Arthur movie made so much money and engendered so much love, people just want more Arthur. Wait a minute, that's some parallel universe.
If Ian McShane is narrating a part of your movie, he has to say cocksucker.
Right, that should be an official rule. But he certainly says fuck enough. I mean, Hellboy is kind of like... If you were to take someone using the word fuck too much and just take that as an idea and make it into a movie, it probably is in and of itself
it's
Hellboy.
Kind of like you had your sixth grade son do the punch up on the script to get an R rating.
I mean, I'm not even going to say that I'm the world's biggest fan of the original Del Toro films. I mean, say what you will about them. I mean, I don't think they're terrible, but they had a unique sense of design that was in and of itself beautiful to look at, yeah. Even if it wasn't a totally tight perfect script. Pretty perfectly cast. You know, Ron Perlman is dead on. I mean, he will always be. I mean, he's to Hellboy as Christopher Reeve is to Superman.
Yeah.
You know, I can't imagine a better person in that suit. And David Harbour, as much as we may all enjoy him on Stranger Things, he's no Hellboy.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things wrong with this movie. I don't think David Harbour is one of them. He's arguably one of the better things about this movie, but the man's not a miracle worker, you know?
He's not.
He's a paid actor. He has to recite the lines that he's given, and he's not given much to do here.
You can't polish a CG turd. I'm Chris.
I'm Ben.
I'm Marco.
And we are looking at Neil Marshall's new reboot of the Hellboy universe, which absolutely no one was asking for.
No.
Lots of people have been asking for years, including Del Toro himself, for a third Hellboy movie. And I get it. The first two, they weren't exactly blockbuster sales things, but they became cult films and have grown in estimation and success as the years have gone by. And I feel like enough time has passed. The entire cast wanted to be involved. Yeah. They really wanted to do
the
a third film.
Written.
The script's been written forever. Like, I mean, Del Toro has put a lot of advance work into this thing, and the studio just not interested. Now, I'm not enough of an insider to know the specifics of it, but I do know it's just bizarre for them to turn around, scrap the whole thing, and give it to Neil Marshall, who has certainly done some movies I've enjoyed, but nothing on the level. He is not an artist on the level that compares to Guillermo del Toro. Yeah.
I mean, those films had a lot of love in them. I mean, say what you will about them. Del Toro loved that world. He loved that story. And he brought all of his own little particular quirks and fetishes to it, and I think managed to make something that was reflective of the original source material by Mike Mignola, but also felt almost like an auteurist film, if you will. But the fact of the matter is, and this is true of a lot of Del Toro films, his films aren't cheap. They're not the most expensive films, but they're not cheap either. But every nickel goes on the screen, and yet they never make a lot of money. I actually did a little research because I was curious about this. First Hellboy came out in 2004. It cost about $65 million. Second Hellboy, 2008. Cost about $85 million. All of them made money, but not a lot of money. This new Hellboy, around $50 million.
Mm-hmm.
11 years later, and it seems like somebody was in the boardroom said, you know, horror is doing really well right now, and you don't need to spend a lot of money. Comic book movies are doing really great right now. Surely we have a horror comic book thing. And now that, you know, Deadpool was such a success and such a tiny budget, why not an R-rated horror comic book movie?
And make it horror-ible.
All of that should have worked, and it didn't.
Damn it, Ben.
Actually, that is almost as good as half of the puns in this iteration of
Hellboy. It got more of a laugh than most of the puns in this movie got from me.
I mean, Neil Marshall doesn't know how to do comedy.
Neil Marshall is, he's done other things, but I would definitely say he is a horror director, for sure.
True.
And he really wanted to make this a rock and roll horror movie, and what we ended up getting was a big sloppy mess that has an irritating amount of nonstop soundtrack. You know, I mean, just yes. Wildly inappropriate moments
and
of like
tone
oh, for
that,
fuck's
yeah,
sakes.
Which basically makes the tone make no sense throughout the movie.
And excessive gore to the point where it doesn't even, that you're like, why was there gore in this scene?
I think you said to me before the movie, Chris, that both of us were kind of okay on the idea of this movie starting. And then They had a trailer saying, one of the goriest movies this year. And we're like,
But it's that horrible CGI gore that just looks so fake that, you know, on such a slender budget, a lot of the design work on this film is pretty cool looking.
Yeah, which is weird because some of the practical effects they're doing with some of the monsters, I was like, and some of the designs, you're like, this isn't bad at all.
It's just not rendered well. It's like you could almost, as the movie progresses, you can see them running out of money.
But the story here, it doesn't go back to the very beginning, thank God. It's not a straight reboot. There is a moment where they choose exposition of a character who explains to Hellboy everything he already knows. With one added little extension, which is that he apparently did not know that when he was summoned from hell by Nazis back during World War II, that his father, or adoptive father, played here by Ian McShane, was there to kill him, and he didn't realize that.
No, I think they also try to say that he didn't know it was Nazis, which I'm like, who else do you think did that in the 40s? Come on.
You know, it's like, what parts of the story did he tell you?
Did you think it was a Ouija board? No, it's Nazis.
So, you know, my parents, and every time they talk about the day I was born, they always mention the fact that Rasputin was around. I mean, it's just one of those details you kind of would mention.
I mean, that is part of the book, but Rasputin is also, well, I'll get into how this is different than the comics in a bit. Anyway, so David Harbour, as Hellboy, he is being put up by his dad, who he has at best a contentious relationship with, to fight various monsters around. He's sent off to England to work with another sort of brother occult chasing society, who it turns out are after actually there to trap him, because it turns out there's this prophecy going around that,
which honestly the world could have been left out.
Right. Well, the world will end at the hands of Hellboy. And he's like, what the fuck is going on here? What is the deal with that? Well, the big bad of this is Mila Jovovich's Nimue. I think I'm saying that right. Maybe
Nimue?
Nimue. Who
I keep thinking of the lions that sleeps tonight. Nimue. Every time they said her name, I just had that. That's all that went through my mind.
That's the other movie that they're rebooting that doesn't need to be
The little thing in the beginning that explains to us that, you know, doing a very different version than her actual placement in the King Arthur mythos, that she was a powerful sorceress who wanted to destroy all of mankind because, you know,
like you do.
It's the weekend. And she was stopped by King Arthur and Excalibur, who cut her body up and put it in pieces all over the world. But now they've been assembled by this one of the bad guys from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Not even all over the world, just all over England.
Yeah, all
Teenage
over
Mutant
England.
Ninja Turtles too.
Well, that was the world
that
back then.
Time,
so,
yeah,
that's
like
fair.
So, you know, basically, you're just a day trip away from fighting another part.
So she's being reassembled, and well, she wants to bring her. She's going back to the old plan. You know, we're getting the band back together, or in this case, her body. And she doesn't want to kill Hellboy. In fact, she wants him to be her king of hell, and they join together. And all of this ties in, of course, to King Arthur mythos and Excalibur and yada, yada, yada.
It's one of the most unnecessary opening, you know, like, retellings of King Arthur versus monsters and narration by Ian McShane, which honestly felt like the weirdest black and white scene. Like, it was such a cheap digital conversion of black and white that it was too crisp and clean to feel like it was sepia tone.
Yeah, I don't disagree. You've also got in line here the character Alice Monahan from the comics, who is a medium who can contact the spirits, but in a way that, like, she doesn't have to do a lot of prep for it. It's just there around her, talking to her all the time. And in fact, she can let other people talk by spirits by throwing up a ectoplasmic version of them, which is really gross.
And
that's played by Sasha Lane here.
And then magic punching later on for no reason.
Yeah, and they give her extra powers as the movie goes on that you're like, wait, what?
And then it's not used.
Or like, hey, here's this, we're on a clock right now. We have this huge mission and we're right here at the heart of the BPRD. All right, let's send Hellboy, this girl who just literally joined and isn't a soldier or trained in any way, and this one other guy.
Yeah, Daniel Day-Kim playing Ben Damo, who is a member of the BPRD, which is the organization that Hellboy belongs to, that can turn into a he's a were-jaguar, basically, but he spends the whole movie not doing that.
Even though they, like, telegraph that, and then they decide to have one small characterization scene, which is basically a scene out of Predator, and then it's like, and I'm the only one who survives, like, oh, I wonder what happened there. I can't imagine how you survived.
Every character in this movie gets a flashback. I mean, if they stopped and asked somebody, the chips and, you know, fish and chips lady, she'd probably give them a flashback.
Like, has a whole backstory that'll
this random guy guarding the hallway. Let me tell you, the first day,
one of the biggest issues of this movie, though, is they want to fit in as many characters and stories as they can.
Well, yeah, it does feel like it's a shotgun blast of characters that have appeared in Hellboy or BPRD stories along the way that are in no way being placed into this story in the structure of those original Hellboy comics. Yeah. So just because you throw in these characters doesn't make it Hellboy. Yeah. You know, I mean, I just went just recently and read the whole first three volumes, which say full runs of Hellboy. I know there's like, what, I think 11 more than that. But I can tell you, this is not that at all. And this is like a weird mashup of like three of the runs, but not in any way that resembles any of them, really. There's some really just super strange moments. Like, there's a flashback to Hellboy's birth that has this character, Lobster Johnson, who is a vigilante that fights Nazis, played
Thomas Hayden Church.
By Tom Hayden Church.
Wait, there's Thomas Hayden Church.
That's like, you just kind of sit there listening to him go, what the fuck is happening right now? This is like, you can tell he knows this is nonsense, and he's just not even trying.
Thomas Hayden Church didn't even know what he signed up for. He's like, I'm a lobster guy. When do I lobster out? Do I become a lobster?
Do I get lobster claws?
That's what you can tell the devil who sent you. Okay, good job, Lobster Johnson.
I don't know.
I mean, and then like,
that should have gone to Bruce Campbell. That was always Del Toro's plan to bring Lobster Johnson.
Was it really?
With Bruce Campbell.
I did not know that.
Kind of hope so.
And, you know, that was hopefully one day going to end up in, like, what would have been the third and final chapter of a trilogy.
And can I say this right now that you should have known from the beginning, when you guys looked at the script, that something was terribly wrong, that there was a big piece of this missing, when Abe Sapien isn't even in your fucking movie. Oh, yeah, outside of, like, basically a one-hand cameo towards the very end. You know. But you know, like, Abe Sapien is a huge character in the Hellboy universe. He's one of the most beloved characters.
Wasn't
in the
it Doug Jones
movies.
In the original one?
It was Doug Jones with the voice of the guy from Frasier.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, which is like the perfect combo casting for that character.
Right.
And honestly, I have to say, there's a fight scene at the very end that leads up to that Abe Sapien cameo. I think it might be the most choreographed they do anything in this movie because it's not even good. It's just passable because it actually has some energy that works for their whole scene.
Oh, okay, so there's an enormous sequence at halfway mark earlier. I lost track of time with this movie because it seemed to just go on interminably.
Yeah,
there's this huge fight with giants, and there's some fun moments to be had in that. But then towards the end of the movie, there are these horrific, poorly rendered, but interestingly designed Cenobite / crazy ass, you know, Cthulhu-like
what is going on with
giants, and they're hardly in it. I'm like, you had a big giant fight, and then you bring more giants at the end that are way more interesting. Why didn't we get to see Hellboy fight those giants?
Well, I don't have an answer. Fun.
What I loved about those is it's a scene where they get, like, a whole, like, 2 minutes worth of, like, killing people. And it's like, shouldn't you have taken Hellboy, like, 30 seconds of stepping forward from that scene? Like, you're just trying to show, hey, look how much gore we can pencil in here suddenly. Yeah. Also, that it led basically to whatever Hellboy did led to Hellcrax. It just went down one street in England. Because the second he's done, just, that one street closes back up like nothing happened. There's not even blood on the street because it's CGI blood. And they forgot to put it back there.
Well, that would have cost extra money. They'd expended their CGI blood budget at that point.
This movie is like as much CG as a video game. It's there constantly, even with, like I said, some actual attempts to create practical characters in here and there. But man, it's just nonstop. And the movie at 121 minutes feels like every second of it, despite the fact that it is one of those. I always say, you know what? I don't care how stupid your movie is, as long as it's not boring. Like, this movie does its best to make something constantly be happening.
Yeah.
But to the point where it becomes boring, because you're like, there's never a moment to stop, take a breath, and get to know who these people are. And what we do know, as near as I can tell, everyone is a prick. Everyone in this movie is just a prick. There's no heart to it. There's no sense of a real relationship between any of these people. They try to build a thing between Hellboy and his dad, and it's not there because all they do is like hate on each other the whole movie. And I don't get it. What were they thinking was going to – who were they thinking we were going to attach ourselves to? Like in the original – in any previous iteration of Hellboy that's existed – there's one thing you can say about Hellboy. Like, he takes a lot of shit, but generally speaking, he's not, as much as this movie sets it up, like, treated as a monster by everyone. People kind of cheer him when he comes out. They kind of love Hellboy.
Honestly, I don't even feel that many people treat him as a monster in this movie. There's, like, him saying they treat him as a monster, but he's drinking at a bar in Tijuana just fine. Like, people ran out.
They don't give a fuck so long as
people didn't even run out of the wrestling arena until they saw a giant vampire. It's like, no, nobody's actually scared of him. There's one newscast saying, well, should we trust this guy? He's done a lot of good. It's like, cool. So he's got the Spider-Man problem. Okay,
but all he does, and the movie calls him out for it, to be fair, but all he does is bitch and whine. And he's a thoroughly unpleasant character, quite frankly. And they try to make things that are funny here and there, but man, there were some jokes that you're like, they're just so out of place. Like the movie tries to make a meta joke at one point, and we're sitting in the theater and nobody so much as chuckled because it was so wildly out of place.
Where a character goes,
because we wouldn't want them to come back for the sequel, and just fucking crickets because nothing else in this movie has been fourth wall breaking. So what was that joke doing there?
My biggest issue with this movie is it tries to shoehorn like at kind of the midway point of like, oh, Hellboy's been charmed by this person, he's with them. It's like, cool, why does this happen that he suddenly believes them? And then literally the next scene, he's totally against them again. It's like, this was just for one scene of an outburst. And then suddenly he's like, nah, never mind, they're all evil, fuck it.
It's a running thing in the comics for characters, evil characters, to regularly go, I don't understand, you're a demon, why are you fighting for the humans? Yes. But it is not a running thing for you to have doubts about where Hellboy is going to land on this decision. Hellboy is always unquestionably on the side of continuing to do what he does.
I mean, I'm actually okay with them exploring that. I really think that's potentially interesting. It's just this, everything else around this movie is so poorly structured that what could have been an interesting running idea is, as Ben pointed out, you know, it's abandoned at various times.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's brought up that nothing in this movie compares to, say, the moment in the second Hellboy where he has to blow up that elemental and he feels bad about it. Where you go, yeah, I'm a monster and, yeah, I had to kill him and it's the last of this kind and he's beautiful and blah, blah, blah. And Del Toro takes the moment to make you feel a little bit of sympathy for this thing that's dying, that's beautiful. And it has that moment of heart and none of that's in this movie.
Yeah, there's hints.
You can't sympathize
there's
with the monsters.
There's hints in some of the dialogue that feel like it's from an earlier version of the script. Like, there's a point where one of the characters is they're talking about how, like, oh, yeah, we meet monsters and we kill them, but are all monsters bad? And another character at one point insinuates, like, yes, I killed monsters. Some of them deserved it. Some of it didn't. But that was my job. And you're like, okay. So you're hinting that there's a more interesting actual soul to
this
story.
But monsters in this movie, but Hellboy are bad. I mean, all of them are bad except for Hellboy. The giants are like, yeah, they're eating half of people and coming back to suck their bones. And then there are actual giants doing just fucking that. Then it's like, literally this monster stole these people's baby to try to take over their place. That's just bad. This witch literally wanted to put a plague upon humans. It's like, where is the question here? Like, Baba Yaga comes in. It's like, what's her point in this movie? There's no real point. She shows up for one
except she's in the comics.
Yes, and for kind of a gross-out scene
for a second. And
that's
actually one of the better sequences in the movie.
Yeah,
because
it's actually got good design. But then it's like, she doesn't even come back in the end like you think she's supposed to.
Right.
Like, There's no connection from like section to section, yeah. except for the loosest strand that they drop at the drop of a hat.
It's a shotgun blast of references to characters and situations from Hellboy comics that don't really fit together, with nonstop exposition sequences that don't serve any real purpose, a plot that's overly convoluted for no good reason, a villain that has next to no personality of her own, really. Yeah. She's just a mechanic. I mean, most of the movie is, in fact, focused on Hellboy. He's in almost every frame of the fucking movie, and he's just not that interesting of a character.
You didn't like Mila Jovovich commenting on reality television?
No, not really. No, they were trying to give her a funny moment, and it's like
there was no love. There was no humor
because it wasn't written as a joke. Someone wrote it, and it felt like that moment in the X-Men when Storm goes, "Do you know what happens when a frog is hit by lightning?" Where you're like, there was a way to do this that would have been funny. That was not it.
I like that scene is now funny in retrospect, looking back at it.
Right.
Well, I don't know if anyone's going to say that about this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I can see watching this and getting some entertainment out of it with sitting around with friends and beers and just kind of laughing at how absurdly, how many mistakes are made. There's like continuity errors throughout it.
The scale of Hellboy is all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, definitely.
It's just sloppy. And okay, so I just heard this today, but apparently there were on-set issues as well.
Oh, yeah. No, that's rumors been going around.
The director, Neil Marshall, apparently, like, towards the beginning of filming, started having an affair with this actress who had previously had an affair with three or four other really powerful guys and screwed up their careers. And he left the set halfway through shooting at one point to go be with her in some cabin somewhere for, like, a week.
I mean,
and, like, the whole time he was trying to argue with the producers that they should let him recast somebody as her. And, like, I'm like thinking, wow, she is Nimue the witch.
Yeah,
it's almost going to definitely be Alice Monahan.
They also fired his longtime director of photography. I mean, there was a lot of look. We weren't there, obviously. I'm sure there's things that happen on every film set. Plenty of movies have been made under tumultuous circumstances and came out pretty good.
Yeah.
So even if they had a perfectly happy, but this great experience, it could have still been awful.
This ain't no Apocalypse Now.
No. No.
Anyway, let's get a final thoughts. Ben.
All right. So this movie just honestly felt like the biggest waste of time in the fucking world to me. Just to give you guys a kind of peek behind the curtain, is they didn't even give us a press screening of this, which
generally
a very big sign of things. We still, you know, soldiered on and said, we'll give it a shot. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of Neil Marshall. I remember seeing Doomsday in college.
That's not a great example of a good,
no, it's not, but it's considered one of his bigger movies. I mean, definitely I would say Dog Soldiers and The Descent are probably his better
movies. Some of the biggest episodes of Game of Thrones.
True. But, like Doomsday set, like, a tone for me for him where it's just, like, you're kind of, like, spectacle sometimes over, you know, quality and over focus. And this movie kind of takes a lot after Doomsday, I think, where it's just, like, you feel like he had a lot of ideas here. But because it's not a horror movie, which is where he excels at, you know, limited, you know, showing limited amount of the things and more making the tone work. When he gets a spectacle like Doomsday in this movie, it's just, he's very much losing his way. I think David Harbour is a fine actor. I think he could have been passable as Hellboy if he had a better script. Still, though, he's not the best casting. It's a terrible script. It's a script that doesn't know what it wants, and it just wants. It's basically Mike Mignola, the original creator of Hellboy, basically probably came in here and said, oh, yeah, that's great. You want to use that idea and that idea and that idea. And they said, oh, he approves of this? Let's put them all in here.
Yeah, apparently he had very little actual input other than saying, you should take stuff from these storylines, and that was about it.
And it sounds like the writer took all of those ideas.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the issue. Honestly, I hated this movie because it was even more of a letdown. Like, I didn't have high expectations, but it's just like, there's nothing here. There's no real tone. It's inconsistent as fuck. I got to give it 3 out of 10 weird zombie witch come-ons.
Marco?
Well, we've covered a lot of it. I think the real problem with this film is the screenplay, which is surprisingly only credited to one person, although anytime I count about 15 producers and executive producers, I know that there's been a lot of fingers in this particular pie. And it does sound like at some point Neil Marshall lost control over his own movie. As far as David Harbour goes, I love the guy. If you've seen him in Stranger Things or in other films or even just checked him out on social media, you know this guy has a good sense of humor. He can sell a joke, but you have to give him the joke. He can't just make them up on set. He's not Robin Williams. That's not what they're paying him to do. And that's a bummer because I really wouldn't mind seeing another movie with David Harbour as Hellboy, provided it's much better than this one. Because this is not any good. I give this 3.5 out of 10 vampiric luchadores.
Yeah, this is just a movie. Just so much going on that nothing is going on. It's just over excess that leads to a lack of anything. There's no real feel like at the end of this that you saw a movie. It felt like you're just watching a 2-hour trailer for a movie. You know, it's just, it has that kind of cutting all the way through it of editing of a trailer. And it moves from one thing right to the next thing without any chance for anything to, any jokes to land or any impact from plot sequences to be felt. It felt like they didn't even know how to film someone telling a joke, which kept bugging me.
Yeah.
Like, it's really essential to know how to film a character doing a funny moment. And it was like Neil Marshall had never seen a comedy before. I was kind of baffled by what was going on there. Even there's occasions with the action where he's like, okay, well, you can shoot your way around a decent action scene. And then there's scenes that he can't at all, and it looks completely incompetent. It felt like 4 or 5 different people directed this movie. Yeah. It really is a giant mess.
Well, if he was off the set for 2 weeks, it might have been all of his directors of photography.
True. It really is a giant mess that there's... I mean, the only real excuse is $50 million is not enough money to make a giant CG-heavy, world-destroying superhero horror film with. It's just not.
No.
And I find it really kind of insulting that they thought they could pull a fast one on people just because of all the shit they can throw into this.
They didn't even have to make it this big. They just decided to.
This is not a rock and roll party good time. This is... this is just not a good time. I don't know what to tell you. It's hellish. I give it 2 out of 10 exploding baby warthogs. Because, you know, I actually kind of enjoyed that part.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was all right.
You and Patience just love seeing babies die.
It's a thing, you know? At least I don't cackle like her.
No, you keep that inside.
It's because there's nothing to cackle at in this movie.
No, there's no cackling going on whatsoever.